Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Coming from California, here's Aaron Alvarado and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Back from our holiday break, I'm in Sacramento, and Aaron Alvarado from Los Angeles. Aaron, how you doing, man?
I'm feeling pretty good. Let's be more precise. I'm in North Hollywood, California.
Oh, well, I'll be precise. I'm in Rockland.
Thank you. If there's one thing that we are in this podcast, it is precise.
It is precise and suburban.
Yeah. I guess you're suburban.
Yeah, North Hollywood's not considered a suburb.
What's the first suburb? I guess it is.
It kind of is, right? But LA isn't built that way, right? Like, LA is kind of a big suburb, isn't it?
I mean, it was. Now there's downtown, though. So
right, the revitalization of downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now it's a metropolitan city, and there's actually suburbs now.
Do you
and beyond?
Would you be opposed or for LA building one marquee skyscraper, one more that I guess would overtake the Citibank, which? I mean, I know that that's the tallest building, but majority of people aren't going to know that that's the tallest building in Los Angeles. It's not like the Willis Tower or the Empire State Building or the Freedom Tower.
That's right. It's none of those. And actually, we have a new tallest building.
No.
So you are out of date, my friend.
No, I am not.
You are. And I can't remember who owns it. And that's how distinct it is, that it's just so
terrific.
Nameless.
Terrific.
And the reason it's the tallest is because of an antenna that is actually taller than the old building. So it's cheating.
Well, that's how the Freedom Tower did it. They have just an antenna that's like the size of 40 floors, you know, which is incredible.
It's a brilliant move. Honestly, it's a brilliant move.
I'm waiting for someone to build a three-story building with an antenna that goes like 3 miles into the sky. Like,
that's the best move. Technically correct.
I would love it. Tallest building in the world.
It's like when you're a kid and you stand on your tippy toes.
That's
technically
right.
That's how tall you are.
Oh yeah. By the way, we took our Stauffer family photos today because I got all my family in town for the holidays.
Can you post that photo?
Oh,
please.
Not for this feed. No. Follow me on Instagram, at Kevin Durant. I definitely stayed on my tippy toes so I could be in parity with the height of my two brothers, my older brother, and my younger brother. I've got a brother 5 years older and a brother 5 years younger, and I'm a decent amount shorter than both of them, but not in the family photo. I'm not.
Well, I thought you were going to go with platforms or lifts. The old Tom Cruise method.
Oh, Tom.
Actually, Tom Cruise supposedly wears lifts, but Al Pacino literally wears platform shoes. I don't know if you've ever seen photos from the set.
He makes no bones about it.
He looks like he's a member of the rock band Kiss with the giant boots on.
I mean, it's entirely embarrassing. It looks just silly. And nothing screams like I lack confidence more than that. I mean, it's like, dude,
he does
Godfather.
He does the platform. Yeah, he does a platform and then he does like a giant haircut as well. So
I guess I should say nothing screams I lack confidence more than him agreeing to star in Jack and Jill, the Adam Sandler movie. I guess that's where it comes from.
How about playing Coach Paterno after he's disgraced?
Dude, he did a pretty good job. I mean, like, I don't know.
He's the best part of that HBO movie by
far. It's not a great movie, but he's like really good in it. Like, I mean,
Yeah,
he's really good in it. They went a little easy on Paterno, maybe, in that movie.
Ooh, yeah. Slightly.
Speaking of going easy on troubled figures, historical real-life figures, we are going to be talking about that with Dick Cheney in this movie, Vice. I do want to go over some other things before we do that. We are going to be recording a pod on Sunday night. It's my favorite pod of the year. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's going to be our top 10 films of 2018 pod. And joining us will be guests Skylar Teo and Shannon Williams. I'm laughing that if Skylar heard me refer to him as a guest, he would lose his mind, but he doesn't listen to the pod. So I can say those things.
It's better that he doesn't.
Yeah, it is better. He hasn't even realized that I cut him from the intro because I know I'm going to get a text from him once he actually listens. It's been like that for months.
Oh, yeah. Expect that on Monday after we record.
He's going to finally listen and be like, whoa, hey, what happened to the... so I noticed a new recording. It's like, yeah, what's up?
Oh, you know what you should do is actually put Shannon's name in
there. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. From Sacramento and Los Angeles, California, and Orem, Utah. Oh gosh. Yeah, but he is joining us in the digital. We will get Skylar's face on the pod, which is great. And Shannon, who's been awesome as always.
I mean, superstar.
She comes on and helps us break records in our views and our listens, our numbers. That's because she comes in with like real knowledge, and she like
an
absolute true bona fide cinephile who knows what she's talking about. She's great. So
She's the most knowledgeable guest on the show by far. Yeah. And that includes the hosts.
That absolutely includes the hosts. No doubt about it. And so I'm really excited to hear from her, her top 10 list. Since there's going to be four of us rattling off 10 films, it's going to be a long pod. I typically do it in two parts. I'm not sure how that'll work out with the Facebook Live thing, but maybe we'll do two videos. I don't know. Because of that, I think we're just going to get right into our top 10 lists and go through them as quickly as possible, since it's 40 movies to talk about. Which means we have time today to talk a little bit about kind of the movies that didn't make our lists, maybe some of the movies that we think are criminally underrated or underseen that we can kind of give some shout outs to, ones that we won't be talking about because they didn't make our top 10 list. I'd love to even talk about some of the most disappointing films, any trends in films this year. So we'll kind of have a larger discussion about cinema. As part of that discussion, I do want to talk about our favorite TV shows of 2018. Now, we are not a TV show podcast. We are strictly cinema, but we're going to make an exception here because the lines have officially been blurred with the medium of TV and movies. And so I want to talk a little bit about that as well. And so that's kind of the table of contents to this pod. But let me just back up a little bit and ask you how your Christmas was. Was it good?
Oh, my Christmas was excellent.
Okay.
As usual.
Good.
Spent a lot of time with friends and family. And
oh.
Yeah, we had a blast. My wife, she got a scooter this year.
Oh, yes.
It's a full-on Honda Metro. And I know you're familiar with the Honda Metro, I believe.
Oh yeah. Had one in college, my friend, in Provo, Utah. Honda Metropolitan, love that thing.
It's really, really fun to drive.
Yes.
And apparently it's safe, I hope.
Well, we did have one accident, but we'll get into that here. Yeah, I mean, it's great gas mileage. I mean, I don't think any of those things are safe. But I guess it's safe in the sense that those things only go like 49 cc's, so it's not for the freeway.
No, it's not. Like Sarah's commute is like
under 10 miles. I mean,
it is. It's about 3 miles each way, so that's the whole reason we got it.
Wow.
Yeah, she can get back there and back to work on that scooter in like 10 minutes, basically.
So tell me, given this is Los Angeles, famous for the traffic, is Sarah the type of person to take advantage of just sneaking in between the cars and going all the way up to the front like those motorcyclists do? Or is she by the rules?
I told her not to, but I guarantee she is. I think she's going up on the sidewalks, personally.
Oh, no.
I'm thinking sidewalks.
Just
cutting through parks. yeah, but
it almost feels like it shouldn't be street legal. In the sense that it's like not quite, you know, I mean, like you could get away with riding in the bike lane, you know?
Exactly. And I asked her about that actually, because I followed her on her first trip to work. We did the commute together on a Saturday morning.
Oh, good.
And there's like, for most of the drive, there's a bike lane. So I was like, are you allowed to legally go in the bike lane? And she said, no, she's not, but she'll do it if she has to. So
it's definitely not legal.
Really, the scooter is so small, it feels like just a bike. It feels like you're on a bike.
It does.
But faster.
It does. It's really it's the minimum amount of engine that makes it qualify as an automobile, right? Like it's the very minimum. So it's kind of an interesting thing. But in a way, it makes it safer because, you know, you're not really going to be going super high speed, but you're still. You're exposed, no matter what you do on those things. But if you're doing 3 miles there and back, I mean, you're going to be safe. It's great.
Exactly. And it's mostly, there's stoplights at every big intersection, so it's not really a concern. She'll be fine.
They're just so fun. They're so fun.
It is a blast. I'm not legally allowed to ride it, but I did ride it, and it was fun. It's pretty dang fun.
they're a blast. Well, that's good. You also got yourself an Apple TV, I hear.
I did. She got me an Apple TV for Christmas, and I am now enjoying the fruits of Skylar's labor.
Oh,
we're on a shared account, so I get to watch all of his 900 plus movies in his library. Plus.
Yeah, no, I mean, I watched Home Alone with my family, courtesy of Skylar's movie account and our shared Apple.
Well, he's got all five Home Alones, which is incredible.
Well, that's the thing, is he swears the third is the best. That's the first one without Macaulay Culkin.
Oh gosh,
we should look up who that kid is and get him on the pod. And what I want to do is remake that Google Home commercial that Macaulay Culkin did. I want to make the version with the kid from Home Alone 3. Did you see this commercial?
It's pretty amazing. I love the commercial.
The commercial is genius. I love that Macaulay Culkin did it. I'm sure he was paid over $1 million. I mean,
Google. He deserves it.
Yeah, he does. Absolutely. I hope he asked for a couple million. I mean, it's been playing in all these primetime NBA games. And so, anyway, I just think that from all the iconic scenes from Home Alone 3, I think we could get that kid from the third film to, you know, it's another boost of nostalgia, and it's destined to be just as successful as the Culkin ad.
So I wonder if some of his lesser-known co-stars from Home Alone maybe put a word in with the producers of the commercial to see if they could maybe reprise their roles and get some of that Google money.
Who do you think was at the top of that list?
Buzz, his brother Buzz.
Yeah. You know what Buzz is doing right now? He's working in a junkyard. No. Yeah. I just learned that on his IMDb. Yeah, he owns a junkyard.
Are you serious?
It's the Avery Junkyard in Wisconsin.
That's
actually
amazing. I love that.
Works for the Stephen Avery family.
Yes, he surely does. He specializes in burning things in 55-gallon drums.
Oh, my god!
Oil drums.
You know what, though? That kid was a good Buzz. Like, he played that
part. Kid was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in a couple other things, and he was literally Buzz, like whatever.
He just got the one. Because in real life, that kid was a bully. I mean, that was wasn't just a bit.
That was his lot in life, and also that his girlfriend was probably that was really his girlfriend.
Oh, of course.
Woof,
woof. Buzz's girlfriend. Woof. I think number two on that list is Fuller. Now we talked about this in the text thread. This kid is in this movie. I'm rewatching it at this age. It's Home Alone is such a freaking good movie. But Fuller is an absolute psychopath. This is a maniac. This kid is the smile on his face after he drinks the Pepsi, knowing full well he's going to wet the bed and choosing to do this, like wanting to wet the bed. Because look, wetting the bed isn't just embarrassing. It's just not fun. It's a mess. But this dude is
unless
like,
you're Fuller.
Unless you're Fuller, like, I want to make my cousin's life miserable. And I'm going to piss all over myself to make that happen. Like, that's a psychopath. Like, that is, oh my gosh.
And why don't you let our brave little listeners know who played Fuller in Home Alone?
Who played Fuller?
You don't know who played Fuller?
No, tell me.
It's Kieran Culkin.
No, it's
Macaulay's
not.
Brother.
No, it's
it
not.
It is. Yes.
Kieran?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
The one in Succession.
Kieran, the one in Succession.
No.
Yes.
That was his brother?
That's his brother, my friend. Yes.
How did I not know this?
I don't know. I thought you did. I thought you were doing a bit. Yeah, that's his brother.
Now I want to do the Kieran Home Alone ad. Where
yeah,
it's just,
why wasn't he in it?
It's just shots of him. Yeah, why wasn't he? He's a phone call. He should be on speed dial, Macaulay. Call him up. Get one of those retro 80s Pepsi cups and just do a quick shot of him drinking and then turning and smiling. That makes it an already great commercial better.
Are you telling me they couldn't get Uncle Frank
to
reprise his role?
I don't think Uncle Frank is with us anymore. I saw someone tweet the other day that they were all rewatching Home Alone, and they were like went on like a legitimate rant about Uncle Frank being like, you know, because he calls Macaulay a little jerk, you know, or Kevin McAllister, like, look what you did, you little jerk. And this person on Twitter was like, oh, in this day and age, you know, if someone called my kid a little jerk, you know, da da da. I'm like, okay, first off, Kevin deserved it. Okay. Look, he deserved it. He got soda all over people's passports, you know, and, and look,
well, how about the fact that he knew what his punishment was going to be because he's been in that attic before. He's been banished to the attic before.
Keep in mind, right before the attic banishment, as he's going up those stairs and he's trying to weasel his way out of this punishment, and, you know, the moment Kevin learns that he's not going to be able to weasel his way, he just straight up tells his mom, I wish that my family doesn't exist. And when he wakes up the next morning thinking his wish came true, what does he do? Is he sad? No, he's jubilant. He's thrilled. This kid is not a good guy.
Terrible kid.
Yeah, I mean, great that he had the mind to go to that church to pray for repentance right before he did what he did to Harry and Marv, which is a great touch. But, you know, look, I mean, repentance doesn't count if you know you're going to do it anyway.
Well, we're not so sure about that. But Home Alone, no, tell me, is Home Alone one of John Candy's top five performances?
Well, it's hard because he doesn't have a lot of screen time.
He's a pinch hitter in this movie.
He is absolutely a pinch hitter, okay? Yeah. This is not Cool Runnings, right? This isn't Uncle Buck. But his whole bit about being a part of this polka, the Polka King, and the amount of time he spends with Catherine O'Hara trying to get her to acknowledge that she's heard of him or his, you know, it's a bit that goes like on a little too long, but since it's John Candy, it works. It's funny. Like really funny.
Off the top of your head, can you give me one of the titles that he says he should be famous for? One of the songs?
Oh, no, but I think he said he was famous in Chattanooga though. I think that's the city that he said they sold. Like we sold 600 albums in like Chattanooga or something like that.
I believe one of the titles is, I could be wrong, but it's Polka Polka Polka.
Oh, it is. Yes. Okay. Yes. So. That's right. I just watched this. I should know these things. But that's right. Polka, polka, polka. Great.
I mean, that's a home run performance, John Candy.
Yeah. He was always a... I mean, everything I saw him in, it was just knocked.
I'm going to take a quick look and see what his batting average was.
Gosh.
Yeah, 1,000%. He was
just
home run and everything. Yeah.
Man,
Great Outdoors. You kidding me? Plane, Trains, and Automobiles.
Plane, Trains, and Automobiles. Absolute classic. Oh, John Candy. So great. So great.
The Rescuers Down Under.
Oh, he's a voice in that.
Legend.
The Better Rescuers, by the way. It's a sequel. It's better. I know. Not a hot take, I don't think. All right. Let's talk Vice. Or let's talk TV. What do you want to start with?
Well, I mean, we brought up Kieran Culkin.
Yeah.
I mean, we should bring up his connection to TV, right? So
I don't want to rank our top five in order or anything like that. But I do have five TV shows. I must admit, my research wasn't exhaustive. I'm sure there are things that were awesome that I watched and I completely forgot. I've binged more than I care to admit. But there are five standouts for me this year. Do you want to go one by one or should I just give you the five and then you can tell
me? Yeah, I think we have a lot of the similar ones.
Probably. So here's my five. With the caveat that the Atlanta is the best. It was the best season of television I watched. The best episodes. We'll go into detail about that. But my five are Atlanta, Barry, Homecoming, Escape from Dannemora, and Succession. So those are the bright spots for me. Where is the overlap for you?
Yeah, those are all. I had Homecoming, Atlanta, and Escape from Danny. It's like for me, my favorite thing that I've seen this year is Escape from Dannemora.
Oh, it is.
I think it's. Oh, wow. Yeah, I just find every episode entertaining and just like incredibly gripping, and just the story itself is just amazingly told. And huge props to Ben Stiller. I mean, he's destroying it as a director. I mean, he's
great.
Really doing a fantastic job. I have some issues with the music choices, but that's just like a minor quibble, really.
Yeah.
Overall, the series has just been incredible, and I'm really sad that it's about to end.
Who's your MVP out of what I consider to be a pretty stellar cast, from the principal cast to the minor characters? I mean, this is very well cast. But who's the MVP?
So I don't for me, the MVP, I don't even know the guy's name, but it's the actor that plays the husband of the woman that helps the inmates escape.
That's right.
And I don't know. I wish that I knew his name. I should really look it up. But
we'll call him Mr. Mitchell.
Mr. Mitchell. Perfect. There you go.
No,
Lyle?
On the tip of my tongue.
Lyle?
Lyle. Lyle Mitchell.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's awesome. He's just really, really great.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Lyle because he plays, it's no spoiler to say he plays a simpleton. Okay. And he has a couple of lines where he says some things that are so over the top stupid that I was like, oh, this is, I mean, for a true life story, this guy's kind of landing on a little thick. Like, I thought there's no way that this guy was really talked like this, like with the accent. I felt like all of it was probably a little too much until I went on YouTube and looked up real interview clips with, you know, the husband of Tilly Mitchell, the, you know, famous woman that helped two prisoners escape from this prison in upstate New York, I guess, to provide some context. And these interviews with him, notably one with Matt Lauer, speaking of interviews that haven't aged well, but this dude is every bit of the simpleton and talks exactly like this actor has nailed it. I mean, in a way that is like, I mean, since I watched that clip, I've truly appreciated his performance because it's like, oh no, this guy is just doing it. I mean, he is nailing this character, and it's incredible.
Yeah, he's doing an awesome job. But I think overall, there's like 10 great performances in every episode.
Yeah,
led by Benicio. And Paul Dano. Mm-hmm. And I just think, man, it's such a good show. Patricia Arquette is incredible. She's as Tilly.
Outstanding, really great, and just the right level of like prosthetics, weight gain, and whatnot. To like, you know, Patricia Arquette is a beautiful woman, you know, and. I think it's safe to say that the character she's playing would not be considered traditionally attractive. And I mean, I don't think that's wild to say that. Maybe stop me.
Yeah, no, it's not wild at all.
And so like,
it's generous, actually.
Usually when we do these things, it's like, oh, we take this beautiful Hollywood actress and we ugly her up to play, you know. And but like in this way, I think it's actually done. I mean, she did put on a lot of weight for this role. She talked about that in interviews. They have like, I think, some prosthetic teeth in there.
Yeah, it's a total transformation, and you can see that she really embodies the character, and you don't see Patricia Arquette when you're looking at her. And her performance is just, it's top notch. It's some of the best work she's done maybe ever. And this last episode was, I mean, you got more of the backstory of everyone, and her backstory is pretty interesting. She doesn't seem like a good individual.
No.
Particularly good.
No, she doesn't.
But then again, none of them do.
No.
If we're going to be honest.
Well, that's the brilliance of, and I don't know if this was Stiller's touch. I'm imagining it was. But with any like prison escape story, it's hard not to root for the prisoners to escape regardless of what they've done. But typically in these types of movies or TV shows, we don't see the horrific crimes that got them into prison in the first place. Now, they do this brilliant thing in Dannemora, and I'm not spoiling too much. I'm not going to go into great detail, but they do save the episode towards the end of the season. Like, just when you're, like, really rooting for them to get out and to run away, even though you know how it all ends if you followed the true life, you know, the real life story from a few years ago. You still know how it's going to end, but, you're rooting for these people to do it because it's just the odds of them doing this, like, the audacity to do this. It's all pretty incredible, and you want to root for people to accomplish those types of things until, boom, you get this episode out of nowhere. Because they drop one episode each Sunday night, or on Sundays. And you get this episode where they show you in great horrific detail the crimes that were committed by these inmates that you were otherwise cheering for. And when we go, you know, the next episode, which, you know, airs in a couple days here, when we go back to seeing them, I'm not going to look at them the same. And I just think it was a brilliant narrative touch. It was really great. It was perfectly timed.
It is. It is. And like, that's the thing, right? So you look at a movie, I think of a movie like Con Air, especially, for whatever reason, sticks out for me.
Wow, yeah.
The way the movie starts is you get the backstory of Nicolas Cage, how he ends up in jail. And literally, they give his character an ex-Army Ranger who was in a bar fight.
Yep.
He kills a man, apparently, but the man had pulled a knife on him. And then his buddy, for whatever reason, takes the knife with him when he leaves the scene of the crime, which obviously happens all the time. But yeah, so like you look at a movie like that, the way they set it up, and they don't make it any, they don't even try to obscure what these guys actually did when they go into the backstories.
Yeah.
It's just flat out, this is what they did. And, you know, there's a reason they're in a maximum security prison.
Oh, yeah.
And even, you know, what I found interesting is even the title, Escape from Dannemora. We know that these guys are going to get out. Mm-hmm. But when that episode happens, when you see them actually get out, it's riveting. You're like so on the edge of your seat. And you're rooting for these guys. Like, are they going to make it? It feels like, I don't know, maybe they're not going to make it.
People to accomplish the impossible. Series. You know, it's like, how hard would it be to get across, you know, into either Canada or Mexico? Or, you know, like, you're kind of like, you want to see people do it because of how hard it is.
Right. It should be impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, are you familiar with what happens to each one of them specifically? I mean...
I vaguely follow the story, and I do remember some of the details, but I just love the fact, I love the angles that they've taken so far in telling the stories, and that's like really why it's been my favorite TV series of 2018. Well, I just think it's been amazing.
I would argue it's the most filmic too. It feels like the most like a long movie. And I talked about the blurred lines of TV. You know, we've been in this so-called golden age of television now for, I don't know, a decade or so. I don't know if we're still technically in that, but we're definitely in the blurred lines of, you know, Roma coming out kind of in theaters, but also, you know, widely distributed on Netflix, and what's mm-hmm. a movie versus a you know, obviously that's a movie because it's not episodic, but Escape from Dannemora feels very much like a long movie. The episodes still have meaning, but it's I think it contributes to this blurring of the lines. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and I appreciate that it's a mini series and we're not going to get a season two, because I think if it was a different story on a different network, they would try to maybe milk it a little bit.
Yeah.
Go back to the well, perhaps. But
yes, agreed.
We're one and done here.
Agreed.
One other series I wanted to mention that I saw was it's a BBC series called Bodyguard.
Yeah.
I just watched it on Netflix.
It just
it's really
out
good.
Netflix a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Really interesting. It's basically
you finished
this guy
it?
Is kind of
like six episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just finished it, and it takes a weird turn towards the end, like a fantastical turn, but the season itself is pretty good. If you like Homeland or any of the Jack Ryan series, I think you'll like Bodyguard. Okay. So,
well,
I noticed you didn't mention Jack Ryan.
Didn't make my wasn't one of the five bright spots. My mom, on the other hand, loves it. What was I gonna say? Oh, Bodyguard. I did watch the pilot. I need to keep going. I mean, six episodes is not too bad. But I enjoyed what I saw so far. I mean,
It's really well made. Really interesting. Do you really?
No, not really. not that you'd understand Game of Thrones references.
Never seen it.
Now, we've talked a lot about Atlanta, and we did a whole episode on Teddy Perkins, so I probably don't need to belabor this point, except to say it's incredible what they did this season for the Robin season with each individual episode. So not just Teddy Perkins, the barber episode with Bibby, which I think is one of the funniest episodes of television in a long, long time. The Woods episode, which is totally different and experimental and inventive and incredibly effective. We have the episode where they do they go to the college campus to do the concert with Paperboy and everything that happens there, which is wild. And then you have the FUBU episode with just the middle schoolers, which is like, you know, I mean, I have to remind myself that these are all separate episodes. They have that episode with Cat Stevens and the alligator. This is an incredible season of television. I mean, I don't even want to call it television. It's something else. It's art. And it's just, it's remarkable storytelling. And the risks that show takes. I mean, it's just the greatest show on television in my mind. It really is. Just pound for pound, it's the greatest show on television. So, anyway.
Yes, Atlanta season two. I was wondering how they were going to follow up that first season, and I think they actually outdid it. So season two has been incredible. And are we going to get a season three? I don't even know.
Well, I mean, Donald Glover says we will when we don't okay. know. But, I mean, it's his fame and Brian Tyree Henry's fame that will determine whether it happens. And Lakeith Stanfield. I mean, these people are stars now. I mean,
all three of them are just in the stratosphere now. So
yeah. Lakeith just got done filming for Rian Johnson's new film Knives Out, which has an incredible cast. They just wrapped, and it's just like Lakeith's in everything. We'll be talking about him in our pod on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that, I'm sure, because he had one of the great films of this past year. Aaron,
oh yeah, definitely.
Do you mind if I rant about a couple of TV shows, by the way, that used to be good but aren't anymore?
Let's hear it.
Okay, so there's some falls from grace here. Okay, one of them is HBO's Westworld, which was already a pretty wild show that I don't know that I'd ever call it great, but watchable, at least interesting. I mean, watch the first season. The second season was just a complete disaster, just a mess of a show. But, you know, it is what it is. Roseanne. No, I'm just kidding. that's also a mess, but for other reasons. It pains me to say it, because this for me was the funniest show on TV for probably 2 years or two seasons, and that's Silicon Valley. I mean, I don't know how you feel about this. It's certainly not bad. It's not like a train wreck, but clearly the quality, I would say the joke per minute has gone down considerably to the point where it's still worth watching, but I find myself laughing a lot less. What do you think?
Yeah, Silicon Valley, for me, the first, I think it was the first two seasons, every episode was a two-watcher. Like, I watched it one time, and then I'll watch it again on, like, a midweek. And had even more laughs, usually, than the first watch through. This past season, I mean, it was a struggle to get through some of the episodes. It's not that they were bad. It's just that they were nowhere near the quality of the first couple seasons. And I think that's we need to. I know this is I know this is a controversial take, but we need to maybe give T.J. Miller some credit.
Wow, you really did just drop that bomb.
I understand he's problematic. Yes, exactly. I made that call. The call.
Wow, that was a big call, that man. Bomb. Dropping that bomb. That's crazy.
T.J. Miller.
Yeah,
he was the glue that held the show together. I think so.
No, I think so. Wow. I really thought they'd be fine without him, but it just hasn't been the case.
So, I mean, we lost TJ, but we gained like twice as much Kumail. Well, is that a good trade-off for this series?
No, I think.
Hasn't been.
No, I don't think so. Martin Starr was the one that we needed to give more reps to, but.
They didn't. He's still on the bench.
No, he's still very much on the bench. Yeah, absolutely. And he's one of my favorite characters.
Well, I think he's the most likable of the cast for me personally.
Yeah.
I think he's the guy that, I mean, I liked Thomas Middleditch, but sure. Martin Starr is my guy.
No, yeah, yeah. He's great. So you talked about T.J. Miller leaving Silicon Valley. Well, another show that fell from grace with another high-profile exit is the show House of Cards. This exit was not voluntary, obviously. Kevin Spacey famously has been accused of a multitude of sins. Just indicted recently. I mean, he committed the crimes, the horrific crimes that have been in the news, as well as the crime of that YouTube video that he dropped a few days ago. I'm not sure if you saw that, but let me be frank. It's bad. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's bad, but I watched it.
I've watched it two or three times. It's like an exercise in cringeworthiness. Cause you're like, what is this guy doing?
One of my favorite things is it's on his official YouTube channel. It is on Kevin Spacey's official YouTube.
Oh yeah. Dude, you've watched it. He hired a crew, man. It's like, it's well lit. It's professionally lit. Clearly they did multiple takes, you know,
multiple takes. It had a writer.
Yeah. It had a writer.
Definitely had a writer.
Yeah. Needed an editor, but yeah. I mean, it was weird. It felt weird. I mean, putting aside even the horrific nature of his crimes, you know, and it just felt weird that this actor that has an Oscar that used to be just really, just considered very highly, and was, you know, could get in any movie that he wants to and has done good work in the past. Right. But like, not interested in talking about that.
How about the movie 21? He carried that movie.
Everything I know about gambling, I learned in that film. He's made a lot of bad movies too. K-Pax. But this is a guy that is detached from reality, and it's clear that, you know, it's House of Cards. You know, it had a terrible season. I mean, it was completely nonsensical. I mean, I watched the whole thing just because I couldn't believe how ridiculous and nonsensical it was. That it was just. So many storylines crammed in that had loose ends and things that weren't explained and hilarious over the top things for a show that was already over the top. And look, I get it. House of Cards had to rewrite an entire season over a weekend. They had just started production when the allegations against Spacey hit. He had to leave. They had to completely rewrite the show without the main character. And this is no fault of the dame Robin Wright, who is one of our greatest actresses alive. She has to carry it. It's no fault of her own. She's terrific as an actress. It's just the material. I mean, the story here is just awful. And then you have that, and then you have Kevin Spacey basically begging for his part back because, and this is no spoiler, they kill off his character in the TV show. I mean, they just talk about his death, and it happens, of course, off screen. And he's, in this YouTube video we're referring to, is basically saying like, well, you didn't see me die. I'm still around. I'm Frank Underwood. And you're just like, no, you're not. You're a serial pedophile, sexual predator that's probably going to jail. And you're never going to play this part again, dude. You got to let go.
Well, he did play it one last time.
Well, he sure did.
I would say he went out with a bang.
Oh, my God.
Well, the most amazing thing about the video, I think, is that all the lines that he's speaking, yes, he's talking about his character Frank, but he's also talking about the charges that he's literally facing in real life.
Yes.
He's saying, you were so quick to dismiss me without evidence. He's literally talking about how
that's
he was
exactly
Me Too'd.
Right. Yeah. That's what's crazy.
While he's talking, and that's why I think he thought this was so brilliant. Like, it's the whole double entendre thing. Yeah.
Oh, no. He was convinced of this brilliance. Clear. He's committed.
I mean, there is some brilliance to it, but I think it's the brilliance is the fact that it's so perfectly 2018.
Yeah.
It's so perfectly the internet, specifically of 2018. Yeah. One of my favorite things that I saw this year was a documentary called The American Meme, and it's a Netflix documentary. And it's fascinating just because it's a train wreck, and it's like it's perfectly shining a mirror on what Americans specifically consume on the internet. We're talking about social media and Facebook and how you can literally have a career by being a joke. And I think that pairs really well with what Kevin Spacey has become as a performer and as a human being. Yeah. And unfortunately, the charges that are levied against him are not a joke. They're very serious.
Very serious.
And it seems like, you know, based from what I, you know, the story that we're giving in the media, he's going to go away for a long time for the things that he's done.
Yeah.
So it's pretty scary. But I think it's perfectly 2018.
Well, like, yes. It really is. He's able to not just beg for his part back, but try to claim that they can't kill his character because it's him. And that and with this weird naivete, like he's actually convinced that he will play that part again at some point. Like, he talks like he's convinced it's going to happen. And there's no way ever that it's happening.
Well, do you think that Kevin Spacey hears no? Do you think that in his day-to-day life he hears the word no often?
No. Of course not.
No.
Well, this is the thing. So what happens to Kevin Spacey when these credible allegations drop, right? He's been out of the public eye, rightfully so, right? I mean, we've seen this with so many people now. There's like almost a template, right? You disappear for a while. You have, you try to make recompense. You put out a statement of some kind. What you don't do is post to the YouTube video that Kevin Spacey did. But like, you know, we see Louis C.K. just, you know, try and just completely own up to what he did and go through that process, and everyone's figuring out what that process is as this whole thing goes along, you know, and that's certainly, I'm not part of that conversation, but, you know, I think society's figuring out how to handle these types of things after a certain amount of time. And so Kevin Spacey is holed up in his, I'm assuming, a mansion in the Hollywood Hills, and he's going to be surrounded by people on his payroll who aren't going to be there to tell him no. They're going to be there to tell him no. They're going to say, yes, Kevin, that's a great idea. Yes, Kevin, let's make a video for your YouTube video. Yes, Kevin, let's bring in the lighting equipment and get this set up. And in 3 minutes, we'll watch you manage to cut 3 pieces of meat and wash your hands 3 times while you're talking. Like, no one's going to notice that you did the same two things three times.
Exactly. Wearing an apron with a ton of little Santa Clauses on it.
It's like, I wish their budget could have been big enough to have just recreated the oval scene, you know, like just that set piece and do it, you know, to actually just go all in. I mean, I bet he pitched that. But anyway, to your point, no, he isn't. People on the payroll want to get paid that Kevin Spacey money as long as possible, and they're not going to be telling him what's good for him. They're going to be yes men. That's what it is.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Well, and I'm interested to see where this all goes.
Well, he'll never act again.
I don't see it ending well.
I mean, obviously, in his
case, he's got his YouTube channel.
Well, that's true. He will act on that.
Dude, there's more people that saw that video, which is up to 8.5 million views, by the way, in 4 days. More people saw that video than have seen probably his last 3 movies.
Or the last season of House of Cards. What if he
by far.
What if he starts dropping video clips as different characters from beloved movies past, right? From American Beauty, the serial killer from Seven, you know, the bad guy from Baby Driver. And he just does these different, you know, he commits to, or he confesses, or he, you know, but he does it in these characters. Like, I would love to tell you right now that I would have the will to not subscribe, but I don't know.
Oh, no. I mean, he is a perfect Hollywood train wreck, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just the perfect mix of unaware, just just completely self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Unawareness. Rich. I think he's got a ton of money.
Tons.
Yeah. So
that's wild.
It's 2018, baby.
Did you have anything or TV that you want to hit on, or should we move to Vice?
Other shows that, I mean, I finally tapped out on Ray Donovan this year.
That's right, you were into Ray.
I was a big Ray Donovan head, but I'm out on Ray Donovan.
Okay.
I'm still sticking with Homeland just because I've been there from the beginning. But it's so bad. It's been bad for 3 years. Sure. So hopefully this is the last season in 2019, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, rarely do shows end at their peak.
It almost never happens.
Yeah, so. Really, very rarely. Well, speaking of tons of money that Kevin Spacey has, you saw Vice tonight. I'm trying to find a segue here. I guess it's a movie about people chasing tons of money and power.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, speaking of old men that should be canceled.
Hey, that's a better segue. Hey, you should go. Be running this running this show, playing captain of this pod. So the Dick Cheney biopic, this is a film we've been talking about on the pod. You know, it's been highly anticipated. Adam McKay, his foray into more dramatic yet still somewhat comedic film. You know, this started with the highly touted financial crisis film, The Big Short, which got him an Oscar for its screenplay, or nominated for a screenplay.
I think he won.
Oh, he won. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So this was his follow-up, which is really interesting. Now, I had issues with The Big Short. I liked lots of it. I disliked the way Adam McKay treats his audience. I realized that the financial disaster or the housing crisis is certainly complex enough that requires some, you know, some exposition and some narration, and that's fine. But I think the way they did it and the amount they did it and the talking to the camera, just it was hard for me to totally embrace it. I think as much as you or Skylar, if I recall, both of you loved it. Now, I was much more interested in this follow-up project, the Dick Cheney biopic called Vice. This is starring the ever-transforming Christian Bale in the title role, which we will be talking about him in a second. And just to run through the cast here, as you can see, anyone in the Facebook Live photo really looks like Christian Bale. We got Sam Rockwell as George W. We will talk about him, and we will compare him to Josh Brolin's W from Oliver Stone's film. You've got Amy Adams as Lynn Cheney, Dick Cheney's wife. And then you've got Steve Carell as old Donnie Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense. And, there's a shot of the three of them, quite a few people in this cast, quite a bit going on. Tyler Perry as Colin Powell definitely bears mentioning.
It was a shocker. I didn't know he was in the cast.
Well, so this is the thing. I knew he was in the cast, but I was told ahead of time from some industry insiders, given this is, you know, Adam McKay, and he's known to get a little zany, and he allows his actors to kind of go off script and improvise not just the dialogue, but the costumes. And so I was told from an industry insider that they, you know, despite people trying to talk to Tyler about it and pull him aside, he refused to not show up in the Madea outfit as Colin Powell. And so I thought it was going to be a great bit. I was like really looking forward to it. And then it turns up in a suit. I was like, oh, bummer. So
I thought, yeah, when you told me, cause you actually mentioned that he was in it. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was going to play Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, what's my, oh my gosh.
But turns out he played Colin Powell.
Yeah.
So, or I thought he might've played Barack Obama. I'm surprised that they didn't let him play Barack Obama.
Yeah, he could have done it. Because
Barack has a cameo in this.
Look, I joke about Tyler Perry. He was good in Gone Girl. I mean, like,
he was great in Gone Girl.
Yeah, he was gave a legitimately good performance as Ben mm-hmm. Affleck's attorney. Now, this movie, the critics have not been loving it. I wouldn't say that they've been thrashing it either. It's like in the low 60% right now. So it's technically on the fresh side. But that's pretty shocking for a movie that is like pretty tailor-made for a liberal Hollywood critic audience. Like this should be catnip, right? I mean, this is going to be as partisan as it gets. Adam McKay is very liberal. He's going after Dick Cheney. Like this isn't going to be a super uplifting film, right? And so I was surprised to see the initial critical response as being less than positive. Now, I'm curious for you out of the gate, was your reaction to this film in line with those critics above or below?
Well, I mean, all things considered, I think the critics got this wrong because the movie is actually worse than they're saying it is.
Wow.
Yeah, man, this is a movie. This was a movie, a top five movie that I was looking forward to this year. And I think all needs to be said about this movie is that I ended up going to the bathroom twice during this movie. No, that's how bad it was. I never.
And you didn't even have any drinks. You drank nothing. Yeah.
No, I was looking for a reason to go wash my hands.
That's incredible.
And this movie's just not good. Unfortunately, it's maybe Adam McKay's worst work since The Other Guys.
So
I think it's neck and neck with The Other Guys. Yep.
This is so okay. So I have mixed feelings about the film. It's safe to say it's not going to be in my top 10 when we do that pod down on Sunday. Pretty far outside of my top 10. There were elements of it that I liked. I definitely liked it more than The Big Short, which is really interesting.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the same category, same league, I would say. Like I was annoyed by probably the same amount of things in there. But like, I guess there was enough fun in this that I don't know. There was something that was like enough, but it's not a good movie. Skylar loved this movie. I don't know that it'll be in his top 10 or anything. We'll see. You never know what that guy's top 10. I mean, it changes on the day, but I can't wait to hear what he's got on Sunday. But anyway, he predicted you would hate this film. I predicted you would love it. I was wrong and Skylar was right. Tell me.
Yeah, he was right.
What he was right. Specifically I did, not like did you hate? Movie.
Well, I think like my number one takeaway is after seeing this movie, I have now reached out to the DMV and I am no longer an organ donor because I don't want my heart going to a monster like Dick Cheney.
Okay.
It's a big part of the movie. So
it is. It's a narrative device that is a choice. We'll put it that way.
There's a lot of bad choices made in this movie.
Is great. Usually.
I love Jesse Plemons and he's the narrator of this movie, and I don't know why. The fact that they use the narrator is
I have a huge problem.
It's a problem. Yeah, it's a huge problem because it shows how weak the narrative is. Yeah. And I think that manifests itself really early on in the movie. The first half of the movie is about the early years of Dick Cheney and Lynn Cheney, and for me personally, could have done without it.
Mm-hmm.
The entire 30 plus years, the lead up to Dick Cheney actually getting onto the chief of staff position could have been handled with some headlines in a newspaper, some old copy footage over the opening credits, in my opinion. So that's basically 45 minutes to an hour of the movie that I didn't need.
So, I mean, I would
just
argue,
starting there,
I would argue that, I mean, they do this little bit where they actually roll the credits about 45 minutes into the film. I actually think the movie should have started after that point.
It's not a bad idea.
Is that what you're suggesting? Yeah.
Maybe even more. Cut off a little more than that.
Yeah.
Because for me, the movie doesn't really start until we get that first meeting with Dick and George W.
Yeah.
In the backyard, eating the chicken, which is what we saw in the trailer.
Yeah.
Seeing that trailer, that's one of the best scenes in the entire movie.
It might be
the
best.
They wasted in the trailer.
It might be the best scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
What blows my mind is that they even spend that time at all having him, like, you talk about that first meeting with George W. It really only should have been the one meeting about being the VP. Instead, we get this whole thing about he says no, and then he's like, well, I'll help you search for it. And you get this montage of him helping search, and it's just like, we don't need any of it like this at all,
No. I mean it doesn't really make sense because we're given an hour and 15 minutes lead up to the story of two people. It's not just Dick, it's his wife Lynn as well, that are obsessed with power. Mm-hmm. I mean they are to a fault obsessed with power and being near power. Like that's their one main purpose in life. So we get to this point where Dick now has a chance to literally be in the White House, and we get this hemming and hawing from his wife, and maybe they really did have this conversation. Mm-hmm. But we're also given a scene where they're discussing this this giant decision of actually Dick finally being in the White House, and it turns into like a Shakespearean mm-hmm. play mm-hmm. that is just so out of left field, so unnecessary. And it just ruins the flow of a movie that's not even working at that point. So yeah. I don't know, man. There's just so many like things that stick out like sore thumbs. And there, Adam McKay definitely made some decisions here. Why? I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Makes me wonder if he's going to get how many more shots he's going to get at these Oscar fair dramatic type stuff. I mean, he's got the Oscar from Big Short, so I guess that gives him probably a few pictures in this genre. But like, how soon is it going to be until he's back to doing, you know, the other guys and, you know, doing Step Brothers?
Right.
Is he, you know, I mean,
right. And I think that I'd love to see him work with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, and because I think that's his wheelhouse. This is, you know, what's really disappointing to me is this is the first big budget kick at the can at George W. Bush's legacy, his White House's legacy. Ooh. And I'm talking about, yes, I know we got the Oliver Stone, but what was the budget on that movie? 20 million, maybe? This is like a triple A movie right here. This is the pinnacle of Annapurna Pictures. Mm-hmm. This is their movie. This is their Oscar contender. And we had a chance to really go at Bush's legacy. And what we got was kind of milquetoast and boring. And
it was really, it was middling.
It was very, very middling.
I don't doubt that Dick Cheney was a very boring individual who also mm-hmm. craved power. It was an insatiable desire. I mean, they touch a little bit on the legalese of how he, you know, sought to find loopholes or ways to expand executive power.
Loopholes that are still open, by the way.
Oh, no doubt.
And we
about
do
it.
Get a mention of that.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. Side note, on speaking of a mention thing, there's a moment in this film that I want to know what you thought of it, but it's shortly after Cheney becomes VP and he's sitting with his staff and they're talking about the daily intelligence briefing and he's talking about, they're going over it together and or something to that effect. Correct me if I'm wrong. I only saw it 2 days ago, but one of his people was like, oh yeah, that's in the daily intelligence briefing. And then basically looks at the camera and goes, which I read every day. And then it's like they keep going with the scene. It's a clear aside. I mean, they don't literally look at the camera, but it's a wink, wink, a direct call out to, you know, the oft reported, which I'm sure is true, fact that Donald Trump refuses to read his daily intelligence briefings.
Well, here's the other thing. You're gonna poke at Trump for not reading his daily briefings, and then on the other hand, you're gonna come at a later on in the movie and show that those briefings are worthless because they're filled with just noise.
That's what I'm saying.
So it's like,
they
where's
had to get
your
this
stance?
Anti-Trump dig in, and trust me, I'm no supporter.
I mean, I used to be, but.
The tax cut wasn't big enough for you.
No, and I think, okay, that's a great point. You bring up the tax cuts. There is a portion of this movie that actually works, and I think that this is what I wanted more of. Once he gets into the White House and you get the stuff about him, his staff, really juicy stuff there. Once you get McKay talking about these groups that are funding, like the Koch brothers or the Koch brothers that are funding all these right-wing think tanks, their attack on especially the estate tax. I thought that scene was great. That was really interesting.
With the focus group.
I wanted more
and
of that stuff.
Yeah,
the focus groups.
Tax,
exactly.
Great stuff.
Yeah. The PR stuff. That stuff is fascinating to me. The even introducing like Roger Ailes and talking about how they got the Fairness Doctrine wiped off the books. That stuff's interesting to me. Yeah. But we choose to just gloss over that stuff and instead focus on the minutia of Dick Cheney's life, which I understand this is a biopic, but did we really need one if that's what we're going to focus on?
What would you, if you could pick any of the, because there's a lot of sequences, there's a lot of meat here. I mean, you could do like, I think of Walk the Line, a biopic that is interesting because it picks a pretty early stage of Johnny Cash's life to focus on, not even the stage where he was most famous, I would argue. And it doesn't do these flash forwards and, you know, whatever. It just picks a time. If of the moments and of the spanning kind of years and decades that you see Dick Cheney, is there one in particular that you're like, I want that? For example, well, there's a bunch of sequences on 9/11 and post 9/11 that I thought were more or less effective.
Yeah. So the first thing we get is when Nixon is kicked out of the White House and Gerald Ford takes over and Dick Cheney becomes his chief of staff.
Yes.
So like those sequences are pretty interesting. But for me, it's actually introduced really early on. As a voiceover, they talk about how Dick Cheney is a master at taking advantage of a moment when he gets an opportunity. And this is well known. There's a whole book called Shock Doctrine where the author talks about how basically there's a tragedy and there's a vacuum. And in that vacuum moment, someone can swoop in and introduce all this stuff that's like really hard to get rid of once the moment has passed, basically. And so they introduce that early on, and that's supposed to like lay out the plan of like, this is Dick Cheney's legacy. And so speaking to that, it's 9/11. Like the 9/11 stuff is really the most important stuff because that stuff is still going on to this day. 17 years later, his legacy is still being fulfilled. And it doesn't really matter who's in the White House because we just had 8 years of Obama and none of that stuff ever went away. It actually got worse while he was there.
Guantanamo's still open, my friend.
It is still open. We're still in Iraq. Mm-hmm. We're still in Afghanistan. So here we are 17 years later, and his legacy, the legacy put forward by these absolute maniacs, is still in play. Mm-hmm. So like that to me is the most important and interesting aspect of who Dick Cheney was and what the wake of his career is, really, because he was that first pebble. And the ripples on the ocean or the ripples on the lake are still being felt today, 17 years later. So give me that story. Give me more details about how the thinking that went into that and why the administration that followed George W. Bush didn't get rid of that stuff when they had the opportunity.
Oh, no, they actually utilized it.
Give me that story.
Actually,
of course they did. Yeah. Of course they did. Yeah. So, I mean, for me personally, I love post 9/11 Dick Cheney story. That's the one that I wanted, and we got a little bit of it. But
yeah, just actually, I did enjoy all the scenes in like the, I don't know if it was the Situation Room or whatever it was. I actually thought were pretty compelling and interesting.
Yeah,
the chaos in the and he just the way he takes command and the decisions making. People don't know what to question or what to do, and it's you know it's pretty. I thought that stuff was really fascinating. Now,
yeah, the dynamic of a vice president that is in charge of things is really interesting, obviously, for a whole number of reasons. And yes, we got a taste of that, but man, I think that should have been the meat of the movie, personally.
So some critics have complained, including our friend Skylar, that this film goes too easy on Cheney, or not even too easy. It lionizes him. It actually makes him look way too sympathetic and heroic. I don't agree with that take personally. I do think that they, you know, Adam McKay is at least attempts to illustrate his thirst for, or you know, starvation for that power that you were referencing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are moments of sympathy here, especially the way his relationship with his daughters and his wife and his family. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what real life is and what the truth is and what's authentic. But did you feel like they went easy on him?
Oh, yeah, I think without a doubt they went easy on him. And I think that one thing specifically, yes, they point out how he basically sells out his one daughter later on as his other daughter is running for office. And it's implied that he gives the okay to attack gay marriage. One of his daughters is gay in a long-term relationship. It's implied. It's not even, we don't even get the satisfaction of seeing a scene of him saying, yeah, go for the throat because you're a winner and this is what we do. Also, it's totally glossed over the fact that he was the CEO of Halliburton, one of the most powerful companies in the world.
Yeah.
And it's completely glossed over.
I realize you can only fit in so much and this movie was already over long, but I'm shocked how little Halliburton stuff we got. He literally says, wild. I'm the CEO of a large company. And that's like, and you see him in a suit and they reference Halliburton and that's it. I mean, that's it.
That's it. And he references his payout package. He gets $26 million. That's a big deal. Okay, $26 million. Yes, that's money. But what was he doing while he was CEO of Halliburton? You want to talk about power? Yeah. There's a reason he was the CEO of Halliburton.
Let me ask you about performances, though. Okay, so you didn't like the movie. You didn't like the story Adam McKay chose to tell. But tell me how you felt about Christian Bale and his portrayal of the vice president.
Well, I think Christian Bale is going to get the Oscar nom.
He's getting nominated. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if he deserves it, quite honestly.
The win or the nom?
The nom.
Wow.
I've seen him do better work. I've seen him do better work. Sure. Yes, he embodies Cheney. He becomes Cheney, and you feel like you're watching Dick Cheney. But maybe it's just the fact that the character is so glassed off from his emotions, or he's basically a monotone, a one note type of person. But I just wasn't all that impressed with Christian Bale's performance. Yeah, he did a good job. He was fine. I was much more impressed with Amy Adams' performance, personally.
I was going to ask you, what were your highlights of performances? Amy Adams?
Yeah, I think Amy Adams was incredible as Cheney. I think she brought that character to life.
Mm. Allison Pill. Just really.
Allison Pill was awesome.
She's great. Yep.
As Mary Cheney. Sam Rockwell, obviously, was as great as W. He played him as a caricature,
It was a caricature. It was.
Yeah. But I thought he had a good time with it. And I think that's probably accurate.
I mean, some of it could be. I mean, if you want a really true, accurate George W. Bush portrayal, look no further than Josh Brolin in Oliver Stone's W, if you want. The rest of the cast in that Oliver Stone film, from Richard Dreyfuss as Dick Cheney to, I don't even remember who played Donald Rumsfeld. But anyway, Thandie Newton played Condoleezza Rice, I think, with fake teeth in. But they literally look like Saturday Night Live parody characters. It's absolutely silly to look at. And so don't pay any mind to the rest of the characters. Just go in for the Brolin dub if you aren't satisfied by Sam Rockwell.
I mean, I like Tyler Perry as Colin Powell. He was good.
They're Condoleezza Rice, and I apologize to the actress. I don't know her name off the top of my head.
Her name is Lisa Gay Hamilton.
Lisa Gay Hamilton. I thought she was like...
Yeah, she's... Yeah. Yeah, she's... she was on it was a TV show, not Law & Order. It was one of those like lawyer TV shows. Mm-hmm. She was on regular network TV for like years and years and years. She's a really good actress.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. So, any other acting highlights? Or is that...
Shea Whigham. As Lynn Cheney's dad.
So Shea Whigham. Shea Whigham. Nominee.
Had to bring up Shea Whigham.
Had to. I just get happy every time I see Shea, even when he's an abusive, murderous father and husband, which he is in this.
He's got two scenes in the movie.
Two scenes, and he makes the most of them. He's great at the funeral scene. Also, I don't know about that guy in real life, but boy, do they more than allude that he committed murder against his wife. I was like, oh gosh, I'm sure that guy has since passed, judging by the ages of the characters in real life and whatnot. But good thing he's dead, because he might have some qualms with what they suggest in that film. Shea Whigham's great. We are going to talk about, he has had a heck of a year. Maybe I'm just going to divert now to talk about it. I mean, I don't know if we talked about this yet on the pod, but we are down to our two Donal finalists, basically, our two. And those who aren't regular listeners of the pod, what the Donal Award is it's an award given basically to excellence in supporting roles. So an actor or actress that completely dominates a year, any given year of cinema, in a supporting capacity. So not a lead. It's not someone who made the most movies, but typically someone who was in like 3, 4, 5. Mostly movies. We'll throw in TV as well, but the bulk of it's got to be film work, and it's excellent work. Okay, it's named after Donald Gleason, who went on a tear in 2015 with The Force Awakens, Ex Machina, The Revenant, Brooklyn. I mean, all in mostly supporting capacities. And so Shea Whigham, who is in this movie Vice, is one of our finalists. And can you name his 2018 resume? I mean, how much of it?
Well, the first thing that jumps to my mind is the show Homecoming.
Yes. Yep.
right? So yep. The TV series Homecoming. Yep. But he was also in Waco.
In Waco.
He was in Beirut.
Yeah, Beirut. Underrated movie.
He was in Sicario 2.
Yes.
He was in First Man.
First Man.
Damien Chazelle. He was in Bad Times at the El Royale.
He sure was.
Oh, he was also in the TV series Dirty John. Yes, I don't know if have you watched that?
I haven't.
But my wife's watching that, so... So he pops up every once in a while.
Vice, First Man, Sicario 2, Beirut, Waco, Homecoming, Bad Times at El Royale, all in the same year. The amazing thing here, Aaron, is that this isn't a runaway victory for the Donal. I thought it would be.
Oh, it's not.
And then I went through the qualifiers, basically, and I failed to realize, in thinking Shay was going to be a runaway, that Brian Tyree Henry just had a historic 2018. He has been in incredible supporting roles in Widows, If Beale Street Could Talk, which admittedly I haven't seen, mm-hmm. but I'm going to assume that he's great because he's great in everything else here. One of the voice work in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, a very highly regarded movie I can't wait to talk more about. White Boy Rick with Matthew McConaughey. Hotel Artemis, admittedly not a good movie, but still he did it in 2018. And then, of course, the aforementioned Atlanta, which is the greatest show on television. So, yeah, that's his 2018.
I think you forgot one.
What's that?
He was in BoJack Horseman.
So only one episode, only one voice. I felt like it wasn't quite enough work. If he was a regular character, you know, like Jesse Pinkman in every one of the episodes, I would have put him on here because BoJack's great. But just one episode, one character, a few lines. but yeah, I mean, that's... Look.
Incredible year.
It's amazing.
Incredible.
And for Brian Tyree Henry, it's probably the last year that he'll qualify for the Donal Award because this dude's not going to be in just exclusively supporting roles moving forward. He's going to be a star. And where Shea Whigham is a little bit more of a, I don't know if you'd call him a character actor, but he's definitely not a leading man. He is great in those bit parts, like Kong Skull Island. He comes in, he's just great in, you know, he's just really exactly. good as that guy. And so maybe we'll see. We put up a tweet, a poll for you to vote in. So please vote for Shea Whigham or Brian Tyree Henry.
What if you're not registered to vote?
Registered to vote, yes, please. Someone will knock on your door and take your absentee ballot, and we will make sure that those get counted. Like the great state of North Carolina.
Unless you're from Florida.
all right, we are
Which
over.
Is another great bit in Vice.
Oh, yes, yes. That's great. So we are over the hour mark here, but and it's also 12:37 on a Friday night a.m. So last thoughts about movies in general before we check back in on Sunday with our top tens. Anything else you wanted to talk about generally about the year in movies or?
I think that just overall, it's been a really strong year. I think following up on a great year in 2017, 2018 has been really great. And I think I was just fortunate enough to get the movie pass. I think I squeezed every last cent that I could out of that thing, and I'm very grateful. Saw a ton of great movies this year.
Yeah.
And I think it's ending on a pretty high note, and I'm excited to talk about our top 10.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Which Vice will not be a part of.
Nope, it will not be. We'll see if it's on Skyler's. I doubt it, but he did like it more than us.
What's your Rotten Tomato score for Vice?
For Vice? Yeah. I would give it... honestly, I would give it a 60.
Okay. I'm right around there. I'm probably 55.
Okay.
So.
I say 60 just because it's barely fresh. Like, it's just, like, I walked out not angry or not, like, it, not thinking it was a terrible movie, but more, certainly a missed opportunity, but I enjoyed bits of it enough. But, yeah, 60. I mean, I'm not going to be rewatching it.
I'm never going to rewatch it.
I tried to write down every film I saw in 2018 by looking at the list of everything that's been released and et cetera, et cetera. It seems
What's
like
your I've, number at?
80. So 80 movies in theaters.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
So well, most of those in theaters. There's a handful of Netflix. Almost all of those in 80 or all of those in theaters. So, yeah. It's pretty wild.
Good year.
I've whittled down the movies that I thought for sure would be in my top 10. And that list is like 17 movies. And so between now and Sunday, I'll have to whittle that list down to my surefire 10, which I look forward to doing. I always make it this painstaking effort, even though who really cares?
I do. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I hope people will tune in on Sunday to on the Facebook live feed or listen to us Monday morning, hopefully when I release the pod. And I'm excited to go through these movies. I'm trying to come up with a list that's with as little overlap as I can manage with, you know, there's always going to be a few movies with you and Skylar that I'll have. Typically with you, I have like almost five, sometimes six.
Mm-hmm.
I think this time my guess is three overlap.
I think the wide variety of genre movies or different types of genres that I thought were really great this year is so strong. And I think that's what makes it a little bit better than 2017 for me. Oh, yeah. Is there's just, it's like stuff that came out of the left field all over the place. Like I think specifically a movie like Annihilation.
Oh yeah.
Which I didn't see coming. No. And it blew me away. And I'll tell you right now, it's in my top 10.
Oh, good. See, this what influences me is that like a movie like Annihilation, I'm saying, I'm not, you know, it may or may not be right on the bubble for me, but knowing that it's going to be in Skylar's, you know, Skylar's over the moon for that movie and that it's in your top 10, it makes me want to drop it off the bubble so I can get something else in, because I'll let you guys talk about it. You guys like,
well, I think you can blame Skylar and I, but really we know it's the all female cast that really turned you off to
I
it.
I prefer, you know, I just, I can see, I, isn't it a remake of the all male version from the 1980s? I'm kidding. No, it's actually an incredible movie, and like I'd be insane not to put it in my top 10. Though for the purposes of the pod, I may not. We'll see. I mean, it's right there. It's such a great movie. But I do have like probably eight or so movies that I solidly before it. So it's going to be really, really interesting. We're just now getting the political fare that's a result of the Trump administration. Like Hollywood, of course, is clapping back in ways that may or may not be effective. But I mean, you talk about genres or trends of this year. I mean, Vice, obviously a political film. Fahrenheit 11/9. Chappaquiddick, I would argue, the front runner, mm-hmm. Jason Reitman's.
What was it you that was telling me that someone called the Fantastic Beasts sequel the first anti-Trump?
Yeah.
What did they call it? Like it was the.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what they intimated was. It was a specific like response to to the Trump administration. That's right. Or something.
It was the first blockbuster movie made. That was a direct response to the Trump administration.
Which I thought, you see the movie.
Yeah. I really thought that was what a special comment that because, you know what, it's not about the money or the franchise that is just a surefire $1 billion bet. And, you know, it's not about the fact that, you know, it's not about the wands and the magic. It's just about clapping back at the Trump. I mean,
it's about canceling our president.
Oh, my God.
You, sir. Donald Trump, sir, you are canceled.
Someone's reading J.K. Rowling's Twitter feed a little too religiously.
Boy.
Yeah, I don't think any of that had anything to do with Trump. But
can we ban non-Americans from talking about American politics?
Oh, my gosh. Now you're speaking my language. we already got Piers Morgan at us, CNN, so I'm going to keep doing it.
I'd actually like to ban Americans from talking about American politics.
Yeah, that too.
After
that
this Christmas I had.
Ideal. Ideal. Oh, gosh.
I'll just say this.
Please.
I love all my relatives.
Of course.
And you know, I tell them what I think about them to their face. So this is not talking behind their backs.
Yeah.
But I will say there was a moment where I turned to my wife and I looked at a table, a group of individuals that are relatives, and I said, "That is the Donald Trump table right there." As they were all in the middle of it.
They
just
were reveling. They congregated at the table. They were talking.
They did
shutdown. They're making wages about how long the shutdown's gonna. Yeah.
Yeah, they multiplied like gremlins after midnight. They were.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we laughed about that. So.
That's fun. The Trump table. That's great.
It was the, boy, it's a lot of Trump voters.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, he's winning the re-election
right now. He's
clear right now.
It would be a landslide victory. And it's funny because I think I said to some of my friends, you know, that are maybe even more left of center than I am. And they are just like stunned by that, you know, like that idea of like, oh, there's no way. Like all the stuff he's done. I was like, are you kidding me? Like the people that voted for him aren't disenfranchised, at least not yet.
They love him. They love him.
And I don't think Bob Mueller's investigations going to yield anything that's going to change the minds of Americans, to be honest with you.
I have more faith in Bob De Niro at this point.
I have more faith in Bob De Niro just painfully reading the cue cards dressed as a Halloween Target Halloween costumes Bob Mueller on Saturday Night Live. The man does not want to be there. He can't even read the cards. He's repeating them, and it's like, oh gosh, this guy's more likely to take down the Trump presidency than Bob Mueller's investigation. Oh gosh. And look, we got to face realities. I mean, again, I don't want to get hyper political here, but I mean, if whether you like Trump or not, I mean, prepare for 8 years. I mean, that's the reality. So,
yeah, of any president, I mean, right? Isn't it more likely that they get eight than four? So.
I don't know how Jimmy Carter screwed that up, to be honest with you, I guess.
It was those solar panels.
Yeah, it was those solar panels. What a mistake.
It got a nice cameo in Vice.
Classic too soon. Seeing those solar panels get dismantled, by the way, it actually is just like got like a little bit of like, oh, I hate this so much that this was a thing, that this is like a political, you know, it's just a prop, you know, in some ways for both sides, but especially like taking it down as if it's some sign of like true Americanism. I don't know. It's crazy. It's wild. Can you just tell me off the top of your head, what was your least favorite movie that you saw in theaters? Since we probably won't get around to it. And then this will be our parting thought.
Yeah, least favorite movie. I know I have one. Okay, I got one. The movie Blockers.
No.
The movie Blockers was my least. I did not. I detested that movie.
Was it Skylar that loved it?
I detested it. Skylar loved it.
I don't remember you detesting this. Because I walked out of Blockers. Not because I was offended.
You were right.
I was offended. I was offended of how unfunny it was.
That's same here. I suffered through it. Wow. So I don't walk out of movies ever.
Yikes.
So that one almost got me.
My least favorite wasn't one I walked out of. It was, unfortunately, a Sacramento movie, 1517 to Paris, directed by Clint Eastwood. So last year we got one of the greatest film of last year was a movie about Sacramento, Lady Bird. And the worst movie of this year is a movie with kind of about Sacramento, the 1517 to Paris, about the three boys from Sacramento who thwarted a terrorist attack on the train in Paris. I mean, they've got a bunch of scenes growing up in Sacramento that they filmed there, and then they have the parade in downtown, and they have all those scenes, and it's just a complete wreck of a film, and it shouldn't have been a movie. And it's an hour and 40 minutes of guys getting gelato in Italy and just clubbing in Amsterdam. It's just – and three non-actors. So not only is it just terrible stuff to watch, you're watching people who can't act doing terrible. That would be awful even if it were the best. It's just Clint Eastwood. I'm just grateful he released The Mule, which is far from a perfect film, but so much better that he can maintain some semblance of dignity while he talks to that lonely, empty chair of his. Aaron, thanks for joining me on this late Friday night.
Yes, sir.
I'm excited to hear your top 10 on Sunday.
Can't wait.
Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.